We continue now with our look at a model of how energies manifest in human beings and how imbalances may be corrected to allow for a greater wellness as we talk with Solaheen and Alicia Tom, a husband and wife team that uses knowledge of these forces to help heal events that may go way back in one's ancestry. Solaheen and Alicia Tom are originally from Scotland and England, respectively, now live outside of Portland, Oregon. Their new book, co-written with Alexandra Terhorst, is entitled Being Human, Exploring the Forces That Shape Us and Awaken an Inner Life. We left off in our last segment with a discussion of the life forces, and we talked about the noble life force being at the top of this hierarchy, being in every human, being a force accessible and inside every human, or at least part of it inside. That connection with the noble is certainly inside. Was there anything else on that that you wanted to elaborate on, or should we just move on to a discussion of other things, of your other model, which sort of aids this model?
I think I'd like to sort of add a little bit about the noble life force. In a way, it's really what all of us would like to sort of taste. It's the idea that when we're really in a place of surrender, this life force comes to us. And what it begins to do is to give us noble thoughts and noble actions, and it gives us feelings that are rich and high and again noble. And it also allows us to look at our own bodies and our own facets of who we are and see a nobility in that. So it really is something that lifts us out of our poverty, out of our absence of feeling, if you like, out of our miseries and our pathologies or illnesses, because it gives us hope. And the extraordinary thing is that this life force, which really isn't part of the human, but it is slightly above it, if you like, it's that it comes to us when we open ourselves to it.
It's a very interesting thing in the book that I made a note of to ask you about. And quite often people, to achieve a different state of consciousness, use drugs in one way or another. Mm-hmm. Hallucinogens, perhaps the ayahuasca ritual in South America, or any number of different hallucinogens. This is not the noble life force, is it?
No, it's not. And it's actually very difficult for us to sort of truly explain this without making people sort of feel in a way
here comes
down.
The religious pitch,
yes,
right?
Yes. And really it's not religious. It's just the idea that it's like this. If I drink some alcohol, which is a sort of vegetable force, actually, and I drink it, what happens is that it changes my nervous system. And as we know with drunks or people who are under the influence of alcohol, that their behavior is never very noble. In fact, it stays, if you like, at the vegetative. It's the animal part of us becomes sort of a bit sloppy. We can't walk a straight line. We may get sick. Certainly the next morning we may feel, uncomfortable. So what we began to understand is that a vegetable force, so a substance, so for example marijuana or any other opiate or whatever, is vegetable. That's its nature. So if I take a vegetable, it can only catalyze me at its own level. It can't actually take me beyond. Now, the reality is, of course, is that the noble life force and the spiritual are at every level of the universe. So yes, we can taste the spiritual taste as if we were a plant. I mean, it's a sort of an obscure idea, but you can't really have a human ennobling experience with a substance that, in fact, its nature is vegetable.
Limiting.
Limiting.
Yeah. In each family, there seems to be one person who's committed to a healing path. Obviously, I think I'm the one in the family. And, it's like, oh, great, this person is interested in healing, but all the it's not an easy path, is it? Do you find this to be true?
No, actually.
There might be three or four in some families,
yes.
Right?
I mean, I was always the black sheep, actually. I got four brothers and sisters. My father's a physician. He was into preventive medicine. i.e. the idea of what actually prevents us from going to doctors, actually.
What a concept.
Yes, isn't it? And he did a very good job, but he was much more environmental in terms of looking at the environment and how that affected us and our health. And what I've done is I've looked internally and seen that actually Dad gave me the same sense of what makes us sick, what makes us ill. But turning that around, what I really recognize is that it's not about, you know, the fear of illness or you know, I don't want to be sick, so let's, you know, prevent it. It's actually what it is in me that can rise up and be bigger and better and more in my potential.
What can go up into that chain, that hierarchy that you talked about in the last interview? There's an ancient symbol which the medical profession uses, but few people really understand, the caduceus. It's the winged staff with serpents coiled around, sometimes one, sometimes two snakes coiled around it, the symbol of Hermes. Can you explain the background of this particular symbol and some of the wisdom that goes into it, some that we may have forgotten?
Yes. You've just mentioned the idea that it's actually the symbol of Hermes. Well, it's also the symbol of Mercury. It actually originally came from the Greek god of healing called Asclepius. In fact, it's probably an amalgam of different symbols that we've put together. It has implicit in it the idea of a central axis. Those snakes coiling around it has an implicit sort of iconic representation of movement, of vibration. So it's saying in that central connection there is life, so that's the snakes, and then on top there's a pair of wings that really represent the idea of illumination and reflection and cognition. And what's happened is that in the last century we adopted it into our medical profession, and for most of us, including myself, none of us were really told what the caduceus meant. It was a nice symbol. And the extraordinary thing for us, and I'm speaking both for Lissy and I, is that we were really given an understanding of the caduceus at a very fundamental level. I had a spiritual experience many years ago where I tasted and saw, actually, my own caduceus, but it was a sort of rather broken caduceus. In fact, there was no central staff. The snake was wrapped around my heart, so metaphorically protecting my heart from love and from people getting close to me. And I sort of experienced the idea that my thinking and my sense of illumination, so the wings, were as if I had a pair of broken wings. So in a way, what I experienced was I was someone who was grounded, who couldn't fly off, who couldn't fly off the ground and look at something from a distance or from a different point of view. And that this snake, which really represents life and animation and rhythm, was in fact tightly coiled around my heart, making sure that actually I wasn't very alive.
And this sort of, I guess, personal mythology, if you will, or challenge that you had, manifests on a very superficial level, a very basic level, as a person who walks around hunched over. You were talking about this. I had a bit of you're talking about a healing experience with your father, where mm-hmm. he was having that, and well, it being at 80 some years old, you can understand him being hunched over, and then for the next 18 months you were hunched over.
Yes, you've sort of taken a story that I had said. What had happened very briefly was that I had come home, it's not really my home, but gone back to my father's home, and noticed that he'd hurt his back playing golf. And as a physician, I decided that I would help Dad, and so I did. I held his back, and as an osteopath, basically helped him. But I sort of, probably in retrospect, rather egotistically thought, oh, you know, let's see if I can do something better than this. And I did some acupuncture on his chest. And the reason why is that Dad's rather hunched over, and really recognized that same pattern of a heart that's protected, it was really what he hunches over. So I gave him some acupuncture, and I felt a release in his body. And, you know, he didn't really totally recognize what was going on, but he was very happy because his backache and everything, you know, disappeared. I went off to Austria, where I was about to go and work, and in the middle of the night woke up. I had this very strange experience of lying on my side, which I often, well, actually rarely do in bed, and felt as if I had two backbones. I mean, it was very odd. And when I got out of bed, I felt that I was bent over. And for the next 18 months, I assumed the posture of my father. And what I started to recognize was that the force of my genetics had been revealed by what I'd done with Dad, and that I had never recognized this in myself, this sort of pattern of, in a way, hunching over, making sure that my heart was protected. And so for 18 months or so, I had to really face this pattern of not opening my heart.
You had to own it.
I had to own it.
And it had been disowned.
Absolutely. And just to sort of finish the story, is that the backache eventually disappeared. And now, when I get that sort of ache in my back, it tells me that I'm hunched over metaphorically and, again, closing up my heart.
An early warning system.
Indeed.